This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
The road is long.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. An important question right now. Is $15 billion enough for the carmakers to survive? This morning, a top GM official said yes, it is in the short term. Long term could be another story. But right now, the automakers claim they need cash and they need it fast. It looks like Congress could vote on the loans tomorrow, but there is still opposition to some parts of this deal. We're joined by Marketplace's Dan Gretsch. Dan, what are the sticking points between Democrats and Republicans?
Well, the Bush administration says the plan should be a heck of a lot tougher on automakers. Specifically, it wants GM and Chrysler to know that there will be no more federal money coming their way if they can't get their act together by March, which is when these loans would run out. Under the plan, the president would appoint a car czar that we've been hearing a lot about, who would oversee the restructuring, and that czar would have the ability to review any contract worth more than $25 million, and that doesn't sit well with the White House either.
And why not?
The White House didn't say, but I would venture a guess that they would feel like that's too much meddling of the government in the operations of a private business.
And why does it matter, actually, that Republicans aren't on board with this? They're already outnumbered in Congress, and President Bush is on his way out.
You know, it's a really good question. You think of this as kind of a lame duck administration that's lost authority on these issues. But in fact, President Bush does still wield the veto pen. And then you also have to remember that in order for it to even get to his desk, it would have to pass through the Senate and Republicans there could filibuster it.
What do you think the prospects are of this passing?
I think that there's still pretty strong opposition to this among Senate Republicans. But the Democrats who are leading this charge insist that these are just road bumps. Barney Frank, the chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, said, and this is a direct quote, "It is overwhelmingly likely that a bill will be on the president's desk by the end of the week."
Marketplace's Dan Gretsch, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
In the stock markets, mixed results overseas today. In Japan, stocks gained almost 1%, but Hong Kong shares fell 2%. European stocks are up 1 to 2% so far. The Dow is at 89.34 after climbing almost 300 points yesterday, about 3%. Oil is at $43 a barrel this morning. The falling price of oil has been welcome medicine for the airline industry. But a report out today says airlines everywhere are still sick. Stephen Beard reports from London.
The International Air Transport Association says that as a whole, the industry will do better in 2009 than it did this year. No cause to crack open the champagne, however. Airlines are expected to lose $2.5 billion rather than the $5 billion they lost this year. U.S. carriers will likely do better than most, but not much cause for celebration there either, says Kieran Daly of Air Transport Intelligence.
You're really not saying much more than there's a fighting chance of roughly breaking even as an industry. These are still very grim times for the airlines, and it's not clear that everybody is safe yet.
Today's report says American carriers will make a total of no more than $300 million profit next year. That's having laid off thousands of workers, grounding scores of older aircraft, and scrapping many unprofitable routes. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, a not-for-profit financial service provider helping nearly 3 million members and their communities thrive. More at thrivent.com. and by the Medtronic Foundation, supporting the health of people and communities through grant-making, employee giving, and volunteerism. The Medtronic Foundation, on the web at medtronic.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, online at kauffman.org.
In this time of economic fallout, it seems like everything is on sale. Houses, clothes, stocks, cars. Sounds great, but we both know it isn't necessarily. In this installment of the Marketplace Decoder, Stacey Vanek Smith explains deflation.
So there's this great-looking gold purse I've had my eye on at the Anthropologie store. It was $248. Then it was $199, and now it's $130. So I should probably make my move, but I'm going to wait. I think it's going to get marked down even more. Pretty impressive bargain shopping, right? Actually, Matthew Lloyd of Advisors Asset Management says I'm damaging the economy. He says all of my holding out is contributing to a dangerous phenomenon known as deflation.
To put it in the most simple terms, it's negative inflation.
Inflation happens when there's too much money chasing too few goods and prices go up. Deflation happens when there's not enough spending and prices start falling. That flips a switch in consumers' brains and they start to hang back, kind of like my purse situation. Suddenly, companies can't get people to buy their stuff, they can't grow, and the economy grinds to a halt.
Companies end up starting to contract, and then they start laying off employees. And then the consumer starts to feel more tepid about the future, so they spend less, and it starts that deflationary spiral.
Lloyd says counteracting deflation is tricky because there's not a lot the government can do to prevent people from waiting for the next markdown.
No one can come up with a quantitative formula to define a human being and their spending habits. You can't really address the situation through certain policies.
Deflation whacked the U.S. economy back in the 40s, but this round could be far more serious, says Robert Manning, professor of consumer finance at the Rochester Institute of Technology. He says U.S. consumer spending has become the engine of the global economy.
We're in a very perilous situation with the economy, and every help that we can to get people out of debt and being able to afford buying new goods and services is going to be crucial to restarting this economy.
So if I don't buy that purse, I could help push the entire world into a horrible deflationary spiral? Okay, I'm sold. The holidays are hard enough without having global economic ruin on my conscience. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
And I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.